Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butter fat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice of chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label. And for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
I think the reason why I've always loved restaurants and cooking in general is that you have the opportunity to come in the next day and fix everything, yeah, you know, that maybe went wrong the day before and kind of start over again. And it's addictive.
This is Taste. I'm your host, Matt Rodbard. Today on the show, we have two really great conversations. First is a talk with Katiana and John Hong, the chefs and co-owners of the groundbreaking Los Angeles Korean restaurant Yeongbon. We speak about the chefs' paths to the restaurant industry and what makes modern Korean food in LA so exciting. Also on the show, I have a wonderful talk with Nadia Cho, the co-author of an excellent new book, Jang, and one of our most well-connected friends in food. Nadia and I have traveled to Korea many times over, and we talk about our stories from the road. We also talk about how Korean food has evolved in New York City and beyond. I really hope you enjoy these conversations. Kat and John Hong, welcome to This Is Taste. How are you guys?
We're doing well.
I want to get a sense of when you entered the LA market with your restaurant. You weren't really, that was like your first big restaurant in LA. When you entered it, what was the Korean American restaurant scene like when you entered?
You know, LA's Korean American restaurant scene is still very almost traditional, I would say. There's so many institutions in Koreatown, and I still believe that the mindset is still kind of that is the way to serve Korean food, eat Korean food.
Yeah.
But you're seeing little pockets here and there of people taking some more risks, being a little bit more personal and in their narrative and being a little bit more inspired by growing up in America, us being one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're starting to see it a little bit more in LA.
Yeah. I mean, we live in Koreatown.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like the mom and pop places, little neighborhood spots that we love. But there, it is starting to mingle with some like modern Korean American places. But I think that for the most part, the modern Korean American comes from a very Korean approach. And I think what we're doing is different than that and doesn't quite fit into that category either.
No.
And that it's more of like an Americana vibe.
Agreed.
And approach. So I think when we were looking at the market, there wasn't really anything that we could totally identify with. So it's been an interesting path kind of navigating how we fit in, where we fit in.
You say interesting. I would say challenging, because honestly, when you're opening, you need a narrative. And when writers can't put a finger on what you're doing, there's confusion, frustration, and then negativity, because it's ultimately when you don't understand something, you're negative. But
sure.
I loved it. I was at your restaurant the first month. And, you know, you've evolved it twice, maybe three times since. But I love that you say that, because it must have been challenging to get people to go downtown for Korean food.
For sure. For sure. It's challenging. I think we've embraced the challenge, and it has been overall like a positive experience. You could look back at the deli, and then I think that evolution has been really natural. And it's been like creatively a really interesting process for us.
Yeah.
And like being able to kind of, you know, feel the beat of LA and see what the guests respond to and what they don't respond to, and then what we like and what we should prioritize, and kind of navigating that journey and creating our own cuisine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still happening at this moment, but I think in a lot of ways, like, we had to go through that process.
Yeah,
to kind of create something unique and individual and different.
But also, like, you have an art program, and you have artists in the space. You've got this incredible space and incredibly challenging space that you've been able to evolve. All right, John, let me ask you, what wakes you up in the morning to get to work? I mean, it's a lot going on. service is intense. What excites you?
Sure. I think, you know, half of it's the responsibility of being a business owner, being a chef, having a team of 30 to 40 individuals. The other half is, I think, what we've set out to do. We've put ourselves in a position to do something we love, do something that means a lot to us as far as sharing the narrative, as far as exploring our heritage, yeah. our cuisine. I think that's like the perfect ideal situation for a chef, is to create a situation where you can come to work and work on all these things. So for us and for me, it's about kind of the work that we've kind of created, mm-hmm. the environment that we've kind of created. And there's nothing I'd rather be doing or waking uh-huh. up and going to.
Kat, what's the biggest challenge right now when you're getting up in the morning to get to work? Because I just think LA, like New York, is just a mm-hmm. tough town right now for restaurants.
I think the beauty of like a dinner service and a restaurant is that you start over again the next day.
Yeah.
You're going to have new guests coming in and new opportunity. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think the reason why I've always loved restaurants and cooking in general is that you have the opportunity to come in the next day and fix everything,
yeah.
you know, that maybe went wrong the day before and kind of start over again. And it's addictive, I think. So you just keep working at it.
Yeah,
keep
just having that reset. I mean, mm-hmm. you're artists in many ways. And I think not all chefs are artists. Some are. It's a very workmanlike trade. But clearly art direction is important for you, from the shirt that you're wearing today to the art on the wall. So like being able to refresh every day and reset is cool.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely.
Kat, let me ask you about, you're both tied to Jewish culture. I'm Jewish, so I'm interested because I've written two books about Korean food, and mm-hmm. Your father is Jewish, and I'm not sure if you were raised Jewish, but... or
more in like a celebratory way.
And then John, you grew up in a Jewish community.
Sure.
So you've woven in Jewish cuisine into Yongbon, and I want to get a sense of, Kat, first, like... how do you do that and not make it feel like fusion-y in a weird way? But how do you make it feel like real?
Right. Well, I guess the term we use is all of our cooking is autobiographical. So, you know, we don't just randomly put things together for the sake of putting it together. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just not.
Right.
It's just not our approach.
Yeah, yeah. your skills are not like throwing things together. Like your background is not that.
It just, honestly, it happens organically. So if you see a dish on our menu or something and there is, you know, some Eastern European reference
yeah.
or perhaps a Jewish reference, a lot of people assume, oh yeah, that's Kat because she was raised
yeah.
by a Jewish father and, you know, has fond memories of her Jewish grandmother. But that's actually not the case at all. You know, John grew up in a predominantly Jewish suburb of Chicago
mm-hmm.
in Highland Park, Illinois. And so it's just, you know, we're both Korean American, both grew up and had very, very different experiences. Mm-hmm. But we both relate to, you know, this desire to connect and learn about Korean cuisine and our culture and our heritage, but then also just having a lot of Jewish influence
yeah.
In our cooking and our personalities and what we do.
I mean, John, the Jun Latke mashup, which is unfortunately off the menu, right. which I was bummed about, but, you know, no shade. That was truly my favorite latke in a restaurant
awesome.
Ever. So perfectly composed. Let's get into that dish and will it come back? Because I hope it will one day.
It probably will come back. I actually forgot about that dish. Yeah, I think that when it works, it works. And I think that for us, that journey is always different. Sometimes it's with the end thought in mind. Sometimes
yeah.
it's with just playing around and getting to that point by happenstance, just by experimenting. We've always wanted to do a jeon. We've always wanted to do a pancake.
Yeah.
Just because it's so symbolic of Korean cuisine. And I think that one day we just, you know, it clicked.
Yeah.
Pancakes, latkes, how can we hybridize this to make sense at Yongbon? I believe we served that with trout roe.
You did.
And dairy and dill.
Yeah.
And it just worked. I think there's a soy sauce element or maybe something like that. But I think that's indicative of our style of cooking. I think it's a lot of it's explorative. For every hit, there's probably a few misses.
Yeah.
But I think we're okay with that at this point in time, at this point of Yongbon's life. I think that's the beauty of where we're at right now at Yongbon is there is an experimental aspect to it. There is an explorative aspect to it. And as Kat said, we don't really have a frame of reference mm-hmm. of where we're cooking. We're not cooking regional Joseon old school Korean food, but we're also not creating like traditional deli cuisine either. So it's an interesting time for us.
Sure. No, and that's why it's so refreshing to see that you don't put yourself into a box or stick by any rules. And it reminds me, I just returned from Seoul and I got to go to a lot of cool modern restaurants. And, you know, in Korea, you know, Korean food is like native cuisine.
Right.
And like, honestly, there aren't any rules there because it's Korean food. So you could see like a really, really great V60 pour over and a Queen Amon in Korea.
Right.
And that's Korean food for Koreans. And I feel like that's why I'm so drawn to what you do, because it really feels like you are exactly where modern Korean food is going, which is not rules. It's not jjigae. I love grandpa food, but honestly, it's not the future. Disagree or disagree with me, Kat? I want to know how do you look at that traditional Korean food in your own point of view?
You know, traditional Korean food for me is interesting. It's unique because I think for a lot of Koreans, it's nostalgic. You remember, you know, your grandmother preparing it or your mother, you know, aunts, uncles, family celebrations. I know that's how it is for John. So again, yeah, there's like a place that's in your heart for it. It's very important to you. But you have this desire to kind of expand on that, to do something different, to explore the traditions. And for me, though, I didn't grow up with any of those traditions.
No.
So they're new for me. You know, going and having jjigae and being in Seoul and experiencing banchan and stuff. I mean, that's all new for me. So it when we create a dish, it's an interesting perspective because I'm coming from it. I mean, they didn't say it in an insulting way, but John's family, when we first met, said, "She eats like a child."
Oh my God.
Well, because I'm exploring everything.
Yeah.
It's new. And it's in hindsight, it's very true. I mean, I look at what I used to like when I first started learning about Korean cuisine compared to now.
Yeah.
And definitely. I mean, it was like my daughter who's four.
Yeah.
My taste was. So I think it brings an interesting element to our dishes because there are some things that I think John is kind of like, oh yeah, like who cares, you know, not interesting, but it's interesting to me.
Right.
So we'll explore that a little bit.
Let me ask you, you live in K-Town. Let's talk about the spots. Cause I, you know, in our books, we write about some of the LA spots that we love and it's always changing. I talked to Matt King a lot about this. Where do you guys go when you're, when you got a minute or an hour free time? I know you're working chefs, so you're not always going out, but
we find ourselves at Seongdong-dan a lot,
just
because it's kind of quick, easy, and consistent. We go to Hangari sometimes.
Yeah.
We
like
do
Madang,
Madang Guksu, Myeongin.
Yeah.
We go Myeongin a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yuchun is right down the street from us, so we go there sometimes for cold noodles.
Yuchun,
Joseon. It's kind of my dad's favorite place. It's a little bit more old school and traditional. Parks, we do it all, really. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it seems like a moving target in LA.
Right.
There's always new spots, but hitting those, you know, those more mom and pop spots is what LA really has to offer. Especially spots on Olympic, you know, near Western and that part of that little sector of K-Town.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. I know this is a big restaurant. I know that you're not thinking about this, but I'm gonna ask you because we have microphones in our faces. So let's go there. What's the number two restaurant? And, you know, do you think about doing something more traditional K-Town style? Does it fit into the Yeongbon brand?
I don't think traditional, but I think we would love to do something in K-Town for sure.
Well, you live there, so the commute's pretty good.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
You know, right? No more downtown traffic, yeah.
That's right. I think John's always dreamed of doing a high-end barbecue.
Yeah, I think that thoughts have definitely been tossed around about a Yeongbon style Korean barbecue and what that would look like.
Well, I mean, the meal I had was really great. And I think banchan to me was one of the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, the way that you really flexed creativity and it was in the middle of the meal. Interesting choice. I'm into that fully. I think breaking that rule is interesting as a diner. How do you think about banchan? Do you switch it up a lot? Or is it like a few really standard recipes? And what's on the menu now? I want to make sure we cover the actual details.
Sure. Right now on the menu, what do we have? We have an aged kimchi from Kaesong kimchi, which is right off Olympic and Western, actually. We have an avocado and shinko pear salad that has hot mustard vinaigrette. There's some toasted almonds and rice seasoning on that.
Such a winner. Oh my God.
We have
bring more, please.
Honey walnut, like kind of glazed carrots. Carrots that have been roasted and dehydrated and glazed in the soy and honey glaze with some whipped yogurt, lime zest, and herbs.
Yeah.
We have grilled cucumbers with chili oil and coriander.
Oh, yeah. That coriander was really nice in that one.
And then we have steamed broccoli. It's been marinated in like a yuzu and ginger vinaigrette with a chicken skin furikake as well.
Oh, yeah. The furikake in that was cool. And that's a nice play. Yeah. Do you guys play around with mala at all, Szechuan flavors?
I am not personally a fan, or I guess I don't cook with mala spice a lot traditionally, but we're open, I think.
Let me ask each of you, what's the one traditional dish that you really want to investigate? John first.
I find myself more and more interested with kimchis and zhangs right now. We've looked at kind of the fermentation program at Yangban in a few different lights and reinterpreting Korean ferments is something that's top of mind for me. You know, it's something I did with my parents growing up, with my mom and my grandma, but getting a better sense of doing that on a larger scale is something that's of interest
cool.
to me.
Yeah. What about you, Kat?
Fermentation, it was such a big part of our lives in the Napa Valley and at Meadowood and Charter Oak. So yeah, I think that's an area we'd like to explore. Just speaking of like a dish, a cold noodle dish.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. It's just like perfect for me. But we haven't really nailed finding a way to make it our own and do justice to the original dish.
You think it'd be naengmyeon?
Yes. Yeah. And so it bothers me, I guess, that we haven't been able to to achieve a great version of that dish.
Oh, you'll get there.
Yeah.
You know?
I think we'd like to find our Yangban version of of the cold noodle.
And this is Taste. We ask guests about the discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid fire, fast and furious taste check. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Each of you answer this quickly. The best fruit?
Apples.
Plums.
The worst vegetable?
Asparagus.
Pain. That hurts me. Asparagus
really?
Is so good. Why don't you like it?
I used to. I recently just, I don't love it anymore.
Is it because
it's either, I don't know. I like a lot of like crunch, a lot of raw vegetables, and I don't really love asparagus raw. And then when it's cooked, it gets a little too like mushy and like stinky for me. I pass lately.
Yeah. John?
Right now, I'd say artichokes.
I had one in Palm Springs that was so bad. It's so bad.
I love artichokes.
Oh, wow. We're going the best dessert.
Apple crisp. A la mode. Warm.
Creme brulee.
Oh, yeah.
Simple guy.
Simple.
Okay, your favorite American fast food chain?
Taco Bell.
McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. Those are like on my Rushmore for sure.
Yeah.
Favorite LA restaurant?
Whew.
I know. Not yours.
Not ours.
Yeah.
Chitlada.
I'll say Cato.
Yeah, Cato. Your favorite cookbook of all time?
I would say maybe the French Laundry cookbook or just like old school La Russe gastronomie.
Yeah. How about you?
I remember when I first started buying cookbooks as a young cook, Pierre Gagnaire, reinventing French cuisine, I think. I just loved looking at the pictures.
Yeah. Is there a book in your future?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Fun to see your version of it.
If we can ever figure out the cold noodles.
the recipe.
Yeah, just waiting on the cold noodle.
Your favorite city outside America to visit for food?
I was going to say Bangkok.
Yeah.
I'll say predictably Seoul or Oaxaca.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good calls.
That's true.
Couple more. A cuisine you'd like to learn more about?
I think Portuguese, maybe. Yeah. My aunt and uncle retired in Lisbon.
Yeah.
And they rave about the food.
And the tax breaks. Just kidding.
Yeah.
joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the food at Portugal is amazing.
Yeah.
Kind of underrated. I mean, Spain gets so much love, but.
Right. Yeah.
What about you?
For me, I heard about this little subculture of like Russian Koreans.
Oh, yeah.
That I've been like super interested in. Haven't seen a lot of expressions of the cuisine, but that's something that really interests me.
Yeah. Jihae Kim and Miss Kim in Ann Arbor kind of plays around with a carrot salad.
Yeah.
Has an Uzbek kind of vibe, background heritage.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. There's a couple spots in New York that kind of are Uzbek.
Interesting. Yeah.
So. That's cool. I hope you guys can explore that.
Yeah.
Last one, your favorite sandwich each.
French dip.
French dip. I was going to say an Italian beef from Mr. Beef with sweet and hot peppers.
Oh, that's just shy talking.
That's Chicago right there.
Kat and John Hong, thank you so much for joining This Is Taste.
Thank you for having us.
Nadia Cho, welcome to This Is Taste. It's so great to see you.
So great.
And this is a long time coming, and this is a really personal interview for me, because I owe so much to you. And I just have to, like, first off, just publicly thank you over and over again for being really the person who is most responsible for getting me into writing about Korean food.
You know, thank you, because you are... You know, we're going to talk about it later, but kind of a decade ago when I started to promote Korean food in New York, you are the pretty much only journalist who respond to my, contact. So thank you. I learned from you a lot. So we are big.
Yeah, we're teammates on a lot of work. We travel a lot together. I've been to Korea. I would say I've been there 7-8 times. You've been there most of the times. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to 2012. Our first collaboration was on a guidebook, and it was covering 60 restaurants in New York, Korean restaurants, and I was the author of the book, and you hired me to write it. And the question for you, Nadia, is let me get a sense of where was Korean food in the lexicon, in the culture, when we started that project?
2012. Actually, it's really the beginning stage of the promote Korean food globally. It's kind of the big campaign from Korean government. Before that, we never thought about really food as a culture. But that time, Korean government, that's really important and really, competitive content to promote, among all the, different content. So it pretty much at that time, still in New York, there's kind of battle between kimchi, Japanese and Korean. Still, they're spelled wrong. It kind of still K-I-M-C-H-E-E. And then, gochujang, I asked so many times to journalist or chef, don't say Korean chili paste. Please spell, pronounce gochujang. But still, they promised me, in the person, but go back, they change it, because they say the audience don't get it,
Such an important point is just the naming convention for all these products. And you really, in speaking with you early on when we decided to write the guidebook, we wanted to have a style sheet that spelled words out in their entirety, that used words like gochujang and doenjang. Mm-hmm. And it really has informed the way I write about Korean cuisine, which is using the Korean words, not italicizing them, not trying to shorten them, but to say the word. Let's go to the restaurant scene in New York. I have a lot of thoughts about the evolution in the past, like 14 years, 15 years. But let me ask you, though, what was it like, being in New York 2010 in terms of Korean restaurants?
Pretty much 99% Korean restaurant in 32nd Street. We call it Koreatown, really one block of street, Maybe Ureok in Soho, Bon in kind of Midtown, but rest of them. And their main customer are kind of 90% Korean or Korean, even American. So kind of first generation immigrant, they opened the restaurant in 32nd Street, So pretty much, unfortunately, all menu name is a different restaurant, but menu are very similar. They don't have a specialty. They don't have really, so really pretty much same. And then they're, even though whenever I had tried to convince them, be brave, get out of their 32nd Street and do your own thing. But they're all first generation. They're scared. They don't know how to market. I need to hire server who can speak English. More money, I don't know what to do. It's kind of, so at the time, probably right now, they don't get it. It happened a decade ago, but it was.
Yeah, it's been such an evolution away from Koreatown, the 32nd Street strip. And, we've had Simon Kim on, which all of his restaurants, Coat and Kokodok, are like well outside of K-Town. Ari Hojukban. Mm-hmm. Outside of 32nd Street, Hand Hospitality has nearly 20 restaurants. Yeah.
Even, you know, that area is more like a second Korean town right now. Flatiron, kind of unhospitality. You know, Simon Kim, his restaurant. There are more second, I think, Korean town right now.
We're going to get into your TV production work and the way you've been able to link with Western journalists and Korean culture. And you have lots of cool stories there. But I want to go back to your time working with the Korean Food Foundation, which was kind of the sponsor for that initial guidebook. And I want to get a sense, Nadia, of how the Korean government played a role in the growth of Korean food. They didn't do everything right. And I've said this on the record.
I agree.
Mistakes, you agree too. And mistakes were made and maybe money was wasted. But directionally, as they say, they were correct in using food to market Korean culture. So Nadia, what was your working relationship with Korean Food Foundation? And what were some of the initiatives that you spearheaded working with the Korean government in New York, LA, and around America?
Korean Food Foundation is exactly when they decided to, the national agenda will promote Korean food globally. That's kind of still really short-term organization, only just kind of 15 years. They didn't know what to do. Even they have a big agenda, but they don't know what to do.
How to execute it.
No idea. No connection, you know. But and then at the time, you know, First Lady was kind of key person to pursue their project. So after a change government, you know, administration, it become the politics, drove me crazy, you know. But I'm not any politically, you know, but they have the agenda, it's really the right time to do it. So luckily they spent a lot of money that kind of for 3 years. After that, all the money gone. But
no, that's the part of it. Like the money did dry up, but the First Lady, her initiative, you know, it became political, but they were spending money.
Money. And then even hard to convince them, but it kind of in Korea, United States, very different, you know. Any business in United States, marketing PR is so pretty much half budget of all business. But they didn't get it, you know, how expensive to promote or marketing and PR in the United States. So every time kind of, you know, I think it's part of I work with them, it's kind of, but I need to educate them how to work with, you know, U.S. especially, you know, even Europe and U.S. it's different. U.S. everything money, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little different in when you work with municipalities in Europe. Now, I have to ask you, with these efforts, the guidebook and other projects, now in the current times, how was that investment worth it? Were there some moments that you think you broke ground in your work with the Korean Food Foundation and other organizations?
Because I don't know any other country, but Korean Food Foundation is under Ministry of Agriculture. So which means it's not it's Ministry of Culture, which means really they approach Korean food promotion is not agriculture. Unfortunately, it's kind of import, export, you know, how, you know, the number.
It's the goods that they are sending to the world versus
so
the culture.
I told them, we just started. It's going to take time. You're going to see, oh, we export more food product to all the United States. It's going to take time. Right now, it's really acknowledgement, you know, awareness, but it's kind of, you know, I see some article, there's some, you know, coming up. So at the time, really hard to see the, you know, result directly after that. But right now, after 10 years, we see a lot of kind of good and, you know, good, you know.
Oh, we see it. I mean, we covered in our book, Korea World. We really want to talk about the modern Koreatown and how the modern Koreatown is everywhere in these cities and not in these strips called Koreatown. It's like Korean culture and food culture is everywhere. And
for simply 2011, you know, Huni Danji opened, got the one Michelin, and then Jeongsikdang opened 2011. Right now, last year, Michelin, 11 Korean restaurants.
Yeah.
Every year, new entry is one Korean restaurant. So I don't want to say that's really a result, but it's one of the results, you know, a lot of Korean fine dining, modern fine dining in New York, it's kind of really acclaimed, got the response.
100%. Yes. Lots of media has been spilled about the fine dining side of Korean cooking. And we've covered many of the chefs on, but between Auto Mix and Ojimi and the Han Hospitality restaurants, to name a few. It's pretty remarkable. Jun Shik is still around too. We can't forget about that.
Yeah, he is, you know, as we call it, is Korean food fine dining, you know, academy, because, yeah, you know, JP is from, you know, Jeongshik, you know, Hoyoung Kim of Jua is from Jeongshik. So I think we all chef appreciate, you know, how Chef Jeongshik did for, especially New York dining scene.
It's remarkable. Let's talk about your work with television, because one thing, in addition to working with the government and working on projects like our guidebook and events, you would often work in Korea with journalists, and you would work with a lot of really interesting projects. I would say a bunch come to mind, but one is the Anthony Bourdain episode that you worked with 0.0 on, bringing Anthony Bourdain to Seoul for the first time. What was that like? That's a big sigh. Challenging.
Very challenging.
Challenging is an understatement.
Thank you. It's kind of for that part unknown episode, because back to the TV, you know, people ask me, what do you do? You know, I don't know. Sometimes my role is different. They really depend on the project, even though we're TV, you know, I can do producer, I can do local producer, sometimes fix or different role in the different project. But, you know, part channel, you know, Anthony Bourdain is a legend. So I want to do the right with that project, because I know that's how influential going to be that episode. I know Anthony Bourdain loved Korean food. And after, I think, No Reservation he was so excited. And then first meeting with his team, he want to talk about Chong and Han. I shocked how he knows that two words is. So he's not just TV personality. I think that's why people love Tony, because he know exactly what is right word to, you know, really understand the culture. It's not just food. But it was not easy. Even talk about Chong and Han, you know, so producer didn't get it. You know, I tried to, you know, explain to them. So after all that, unfortunately, we are not good at really deliver the message what is Han and Chong to, you know, tell the story about the Korean food through the food, you know. So
a missed opportunity, you would say, that episode.
So whenever if I have second opportunity, I want to really take the Tony back to Korea. Really, I want to do the right thing to show what is Han and Jung through food, but it's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, it doesn't happen with him, but there are plenty of interesting observers of food out there doing great television, doing great YouTube. I think YouTube is an interesting place for food travel. What are some other shows or media folks that you worked with in terms of collaborations?
In the beginning, the Korean government always preferred a big name. We call it kind of, you know, the old media
legacy media.
It's like NBC, CBS, CNN. So that's why I work with a lot of big legacy media.
A lot of NBC work, yep.
Yes. And then I still work with them, but I appreciate I work with either, you know, YouTube and Netflix or much, much more different platform, you know. And they kind of, right now, they appreciate Korean government or Korean, all the audience understand how important, even they, right now, they don't get it. They don't like, the legacy media, or YouTube.
Which is fair. And I think that's actually a smart move by then, finally, not to think about only the brand name, but actually what people are listening to. You mentioned very briefly Netflix, but I think it's a huge moment in your career is when you worked with the producers of Chef's Table on the kind of legendary Jun Kwon episode, the Buddhist temple, the monk chef down in Jeollado, at the temple. You worked with Jun Kwon and you brought David Gelb and team down there. What was that shoot, which is now one of the most iconic episodes of food television ever made? What was that shoot like?
I knew we spent 2 weeks in the temple, but kind of in the middle of the shooting, kind of David and I, Nadia, it's going to be big. It's going to be something different, because when I had the first meeting with David, I think a little challenging for him or his team because it's the first time to, you know, have the host or talent, not fine dining chef who doesn't have a restaurant. And then always they shoot the food beautifully, but kind of temper food is kind of very humble. Night, you know, so they...
It's not meant to be shown off and plated beautifully.
No, but during the shooting, we know it's kind of, that's our stereotype, what is kind of beautiful food scene, you know, and then it is the right time. I don't think I just tell the story of one monk temple food. It has what is the philosophy of the Korean food, no food waste, appreciation, you know, so many different story, philosophy behind the Korean food. I think that's why people love this story. That's why I love the TV work, because the one content, how, you know, inspire so many people over global the world, you know. And then, you know, that's the Chef Table Jeongan episode.
It was really a big moment for Korean culture because it made the really strong case that Korean food is not simply barbecue. There's a whole world that's outside of the grills. And I want to stay with temple cuisine because you mentioned it, and it's very true. Like, Jung Kwon is one person. But as I write in Korea World with Dookie, there's a whole section about the temple cuisine throughout Korea. And you and I and Alex Lau and Dookie and team got to go and stay overnight at a temple, and we went to several temples during the research for the book, and we write about it in the section. I'd like to get your sense of how temple cuisine and the Buddhist religion, it permeates Korean culture. It's not just one person who's doing the fancy, you know, TV appearances. There's a network of monk chefs and of just nun chefs and just chefs who work in temples who maybe are non-religious, but they're part of this culture. It's really unique.
I'm not a Buddhist. And then it's pretty much, even though I'm Korean, it's kind of first time for me to really get into the temple because of this, you know. So I, even every time I learn, but for Korean, the Buddhism is not the religion, it's more like, you know, philosophy, because we're all the based on culture, a lot of Buddhism really behind, really for a long time, more than, you know, 100 years. So even though I'm not Buddhist, I kind of get sense with how Buddhism is really into our food scene. So even when I, there's several monks in Korea, in Nan, who does temple food. The reason why I love, you know, Jeongwan at the time, first of all, her temple art is beautiful. And then I love her food. No matter, even though temple food, the delicious. That's my kind of motto. Food should be delicious.
Yeah.
No matter what, vegetarian or it should be delicious. I love her food. And then I love her, the temple foods as kind of trying to do it. You know, no food waste, vegetarian. It's kind of all the right globally we are worried about, thinking about the kind of really, you know, social and activism. So that's how connected to the right now. And then that's people want, when they go to Korea, they want to experience temple cuisine, even though they are not Buddhism. I don't think it's really just because of the Jeongwan. They want to learn. And then I heard so many people after that, I changed my diet. I started the meditation. It's kind of, so it kind of really changed their experience moment. I think that's kind of the temple cuisine. It's playing role of in the Korean food right now.
It's also to add a bit of a tourist opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because if you visit Korea, and we have read about this in the book, you can do temple stays, which are really, really unique. You can spend a day, you can spend a week, but you book it through a website in English and you can stay. And it's, I would say, you know, with wellness and health and wellness in top of mind with many travelers, it's a great way to do, you know, you do Seoul and Busan for a week, and then you maybe do like 3 days at a temple.
And that, I'm not sure you remember, 10 years ago, when I told you about a temple cuisine or a temple, you are not interested at all.
I know.
I'm not interested in. But I'm very surprised that last trip, you know, for the war, Korean War, Nadia, I want to try experience a temple stay in temple cuisine. I was very surprised. Hey, man, you are...
calling me out. I love it. You're calling me correct. And it's true. I was less interested, definitely less interested in it. And I think the Jung Kwon episode kind of got me started. But then I was like, there's a whole network. We did go with Eric Repair. We've kind of forgotten about that trip. We took Eric Repair, and I wrote a story for Bon Appetit, and you were there the whole time. And we got to hang out with him in Korea for a week. And oh, that was fun.
It was fun, you know. And I think it's the time, even I love that experience because Eric is a French and a fine dining chef. You are a journalist. When we go to one restaurant or experience something, you respond each other very different. Yeah. I love to see how you embrace, even though same dish, same restaurant, it's kind of over for me is a learning process to how, you know, chef or journalist, you know, accept that food differently. So I love that watching you guys have a really different...
It was cool. It's a really nice observation that you have because I think we have very different points of view and you know, he definitely prized certain elements of it as I did, but we differed too.
And it's not really, you know, someone is right, someone is wrong, no. Just a different. I think that become my asset to, you know, all last decade because all Korean food have all different aspects. So I learned from different, even chefs, they have a different, you know, really approach.
Let me ask you about Jung, your the book you just published. So
yes.
not too long ago, this spring,
March
12th. And with the chef Minggu Kang and you know Joshua David Stein, and it's an amazing book. I really really learned a lot from reading it. I thought that there was never a book written about Jung in English, and you did something really unique with it. Let me ask you, what inspired the book, and really what's the book now that it's been out a little while? What are you learning about the book?
First of all, I want to thank you. You introduced Joshua to us. He was a great writer.
He's there was only one choice. Joshua is a terrific writer. He's also just a curious guy who wants to learn on all of his projects. And I knew there was so much for him to learn. And he did a terrific job, really terrific job.
And then I know Minggu for a long time, even before he opened Mingles. So now he become most respected chef. It's kind of the leader of the old chef in Korea. So during the pandemic, I had a lunch with Minggu in Seoul. Minggu, you know, I want to write the book. And then about the Mingles, I'm not interested. And he said, it's going to be, you know, probably about something, what is the most important element in Korean food? It was a jang. So we mean it's the jang. But we didn't, at the time, it's kind of several way to rewrite the jang.
Yeah.
But I don't want to really do rewrite in Korean and translate something like it's not going to work. I know that. So it's better. It's kind of really challenging. I think it's really most unique teamwork writing book. I think all the kind of publishing cookbook. So it's better the teamwork we have American writer in the beginning point we start co-write, you know, write. So you introduced me, Joshua, and I believe it's a really challenging job for him because he didn't know anything about Korean food before he joined this project. So every week we had a Zoom meeting. It's kind of the kind of process. We jump so many information to Joshua.
Oh.
He, you know, I know it's not easy for him really digest all the information about even Chang itself. It's not easy. Is it?
Absolutely, you know. Not. It's highly technical work to make jang, which is, to be clear, gochujang, tenjang, and ganjang, the three main components of Korean cooking,
mm-hmm.
Which could be the red chili paste, the bean paste, and the soy sauce.
Mm-hmm. And then even, you know, there's no textbook or, you know, theory in a book out there, even though in Korean. So we need to so many research, we need to interview, we had to, you know, or the professor or scientist to get this information, try to really, you know, there's no, you know, standard something. Even though we call it 한식된장, 양조된장, there's no, you know, standard. So we need to, what is between all, try to be neutral, not really biased to buy the with certain company or, you know, so it's a really challenging process. But it's so important to do it because, you know, if you go to Korean restaurant in New York, in Seoul, one table, kind of 80 dishes is from one of them.
Gochujang, doenjang,
ganjang. So it's impossible, you know, to understand Korean food without them. So it's worth it.
I loved it. And really highly technical work, but still very readable and cookable. Let me ask you, while going on book tour and talking to a lot of readers, are you getting a sense, are people cooking Korean food around America?
Yeah, I'm very surprised.
Yeah.
First of all, or we had the book tour in New York, San Francisco, in LA, all Korean American community in LA, you know, they are a big supporter. They, you know, thank you so much, you know, writing this book. It's really important for, you know, second generation.
The community was excited.
Yes. But even non-Korean, you know, they, in San Francisco, we had an event in bookstore. One guy, he was not Korean, and he brought the 2 month gochujang and then show us. I'm not sure it's the first time. Do you have any relatives or family member of Korean? No, I wanted to make it, and then I'm not sure it's right direction or not, because it looks like they're fermenting right now.
Yeah.
But so impressed, you know, I think it's the right time too. They know, they want to know about the Chang and really what is backbone of Korean food.
Oh my gosh. And I'm sure so many professionals too, folks who work in restaurants, who are chefs, who are in culinary school, even young students in high school who want to learn about Korean food can, and especially the technical elements about gochujang, doenjang, and ganjang. It's the book. Jang is the book.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Chef, even though not Korean chef, you know, they know the gochujang, but they didn't know what really kind of how come from, made of, you know, kind of flavor component. So
yeah.
Chefs are very excited. You know, Mingo did a great job about the recipe because we didn't want to have a recipe only Korean dishes, because the main goal is if you have gochujang in your pantry, you're not just only, you know, cooking the Korean cuisine, you can use this gochujang to pasta or, you know, pizza or barbecue.
Pizza, you say? Let's go. Pizza?
Yes.
Gochujang?
We had the event in Stanford University. They use ganjang pizza.
I'm super into that. Trust me. I think...
It was great.
I believe so. I believe that these Korean flavors that you and I have written books about, and we are really interested in, you, your family, and me just as a journalist. I mean, these are the flavors of the future. This is what people want to make. So, speaking of flavors, you and I were in Seoul recently a couple months ago, and I was working on a magazine article, and I want to get a sense from you. What do you take away from our trip to Korea when you were looking at the modern restaurant scenes, not the traditional places that cover, you know, the chiges and tangs and places that are more like, you know, the old school, but like the modern wave? And I think that's like been my interest in recent writing. What are you taking away from the modern scene in Seoul?
I don't think it's really one factor, but I think after COVID, a lot of pastry or chef who work in the Europe and US, there's only chance they need to come back home, you know, Korea. So instead of they go back to the Europe or United States, they open their restaurant based on the training in, you know, Spain, France, you know, United States. And then, you know, and then they open restaurant with their modern technique or Western technique in using the Korean local ingredient. So become so diverse, so diverse. Even though they have a French restaurant, but really diverse with many different techniques or many different ways. The crazy thing scene right now in Seoul is a dessert scene. You see that. Is some, you know, influenced by French and Japanese, but Korean good at it is kind of digest all the real technique and do our own thing.
Exactly.
So they're very, very talented, you know, Patisserie opened the restaurant, opened their cozy, unique boutique store in Seoul, spread out in Seongsu, Apgujeong, in, you know, Hongdae, all everywhere, in Itaewon. It's amazing. Amazing.
Oh my God, I agree. I mean, we went to Honeybee, which comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the pastry at Honeybee. What are some restaurants, not just pastry, but all restaurants in modern Seoul that you would recommend we go to?
Fine dining, of course, Mingles. And
yeah.
Seventh Store and the Etonic Garden.
If you can book at any of those, it's quite difficult.
I know.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Unfortunately.
I've tried to send people to Mingles and it's like, I don't have the bat phone. You do. Yeah. Call Nadi if you need a reservation.
Awesome. Yes. Call me.
Hit her up on Instagram.
Yeah. And then, but, you know, there's a restaurant, Flavor Town, in Seongsu. Actually, they had the restaurant in Australia. It's the same story. Instead of go back to Australia, they open a restaurant, but they're doing kind of Chinese influence. So very unique, very interesting concept, you know, in the really hip, cool area.
I love Flavor Town. I'm writing about it. And what they're doing is bringing mala, the Szechuan peppercorn. So it's not just Chinese, but it's Szechuan to Korean dishes. And I love it. And I think mala entering Korean cooking there's a place in LA that's doing it too. And I think it's like the next big movement in America is this mala accented Korean cooking.
Last 2 years, it's kind of big trend in Seoul. Mala is kind of mala time. It's really
mala time,
kind of
yeah.
Authentic. You know, the Sichuan food, but I love their approach. They use their ingredient, but not only the Sichuan food. You know, they use their own ways, kind of creative way. I love those kind of young chef try, do many different influence, make their own thing, you know. I love that.
Are there any other restaurants, one more that comes to mind in Seoul that you just like, you got to go there?
Modern restaurant?
Yeah, we'll say modern. Or we could say any. Well, I don't want to restrict it.
Because if always I have sort of kind of hesitation, what is modern, you know? And even when you go to, when we walking in the Seongsu, you saw a long line of the gamjatang place with the young generation.
It's pretty
fun. I think right now that's kind of hip trendy in Korea. Even young generation go to kind of uncle flavor food restaurant instead of in a cool hip. You know, they take it as a hip, you know. So they love go to Pyongyang Naengmyeon. They think that's a hip, even though they appreciate those kind of really traditional flavor. So I do recommend go to Jimmi Naengmyeon. It's my favorite Naengmyeon place.
Yeah, yeah. Naengmyeon or like a mandujip, we're going to see up in like a northern part of Seoul. Mm-hmm. Long lines, gamjatang you mentioned. I liken it to like the young high school generation, like going to the diner, like going to that like comforting old school, just for like the nostalgia of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see it in Tokyo as well. In some of the old neighborhoods in Tokyo, some of those old school restaurants have like a little bit of a younger crowd, and there's like some nostalgia. I want to ask one more question about modern Seoul restaurants. Let's talk about Mangtan and Sungchang. Mangtan barbecue and Sungchang as well. Like Mangtan is a beef restaurant, Sungchang is a pork restaurant. They're both kind of like play around with the idea of nostalgia. Sungchang is in Ujuro, which is a quickly gentrifying part of Seoul. What do you think about the way these two restaurants are impacting Korean cuisine?
Korean barbecue, still most famous Korean kind of dining scene in the globally. But if you go to Korea, there even though Korean, you know, beef barbecue, there's so many different types of barbecue, you know. In United States, less popular pork barbecue, but, you know, still in Korea, if you go to samgyeopsal restaurant or hangjeongsal, garibsal, or different special part in the pork barbecue. I love that they're so smart that one company, the Mongtan and Sancheong, the management, they know how to kind of authentic Korean barbecue scene to really kind of smart hip way, really cool location, presentation is hip, but the flavor is very authentic. They execute so well.
I mean, they've got like, you know, roe and all like, you know, Korean roe as a dipping sauce. They've got like really unique cuts like jaw and neck on the pork side. And I think the banchan is really, it harkens to an old school time, but it's more modern as well.
I think they appeal the young generation. But Mongtan is the name of city in Jeollado in, you know, southern west. Sancheong is the city name is eastern south. So they kind of it show you we use kind of local regional food. It means it's kind of hip, trendy.
Yeah,
you know?
It's cool. Like the regionality of Korean cuisine.
Yes, yes.
Which has been something that hasn't translated until recent time, right? And we're seeing it here in New York as well, like Ariari, Busan cuisine.
It's amazing, you know. Even Okdongsik does a 돼지국밥. It's a 돼지국밥 is kind of little special dishes from Busan. You know, it become New York Times fame.
Yeah, Okdongsik made the top 100 restaurants
exactly.
in New York. To see that list, I just reviewed it this morning, and there were like five Korean restaurants on that list.
Yeah, it's kind of because I admitted I was wrong because 돼지국밥, I thought it's not going to work, but I was wrong.
I mean, it's 돼지국밥, it's mandu, it's kimchi, it's three things, right? I feel like simplicity helps Korean cuisine in America.
Even 돼지국밥 compared to really authentic 돼지국밥 restaurant in Busan, it's kind of more mild, bland, less gamey.
Then the criticism comes in, Nadia.
Oh, okay. I should shut up.
Taking shooting darts, you know, it's fun.
No,
it's fine.
But I think that's why it worked. If they brought exactly authentic, original, you know, 돼지국밥 to New York, it's going to be very hard. But
it's harsh, yeah. And you have it for a hangover. It's like, you know, great morning stew. But in America, it's dinner.
But I'm happy I was wrong.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. On This Is Taste, we ask guests about their discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid-fire Fast and Furious taste check.
Okay.
Nadia, are you ready?
I have a little...
You've taken some notes.
Note, yes.
You have... This is less spontaneous. It is okay. The best fruit?
We call it Korean pear, but you know Asian pear.
Yeah, we call it Korean pear too.
Thank
here.
You.
It's Korean pear.
And Korean pear.
What are the seasons? Is it fall?
Yeah, fall.
Yeah. And it's hard, like sometimes H Mart sells them and they're like not as good.
Not as good.
You have to find the right place or when they grow here.
Sometimes, really seasonally, sometimes you get from really Korea. But I hope there's some farm in United States with similar weather in Korea. They have the Asian pear, Korean pear, the similar sweetness, texture.
Or find a Korean friend who has a tree in their backyard. That's what you got to find.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best.
Yes.
The worst vegetable?
A French bean.
Oh, the French bean. The French cut. Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah. It has a weird, it's a weird texture.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all good. You can apologize to the French bean committee. The best dessert?
A gelato.
Oh, yeah. What flavor?
Chocolate.
Yeah, yeah, right on. Your favorite American fast food chain?
Unfortunately, I should say Chipotle.
Chipotle is not unfortunate. I like that choice. Not bad.
Thank you.
It's a good call.
Oh, well, yeah. But, you know, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, American franchising.
Fast food, yeah. Your favorite cookbook of all time?
Fermentation, Luna Cipollone.
Yeah, it's a great book. Your favorite New York City restaurant right now?
Muno.
Yeah, Muno. Mm-hmm. It's doing great work. Did that make the Wells list? It did not make it. Next
but, time. You know, Muno, I love their approach. You know, it's kind of the full course. If you don't like a full course kind of finding, but you can go to Muno. I strongly recommend the same quality of, you know, course, but they have really authentic flavor Korean food.
A couple more. Favorite city outside America to visit for food?
Barcelona.
Oh, right on. Oh, I love that city.
Not Korea.
No, but Korea. It's Barcelona. That's where you're gonna retire.
Yeah.
Barcelona. All right, a few more. Cuisine you would like to learn more about?
Mediterranean.
Yeah, yeah. Last one, your favorite sandwich?
Egg sandwich.
Like what kind? Let's go there. Egg salad?
Yeah, egg salad.
No way. Egg salad.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Because I'm not a fan of real sandwich person. So sometimes I have, because I don't like kind of, first of all, I like soft bread. That's why egg sandwich. During sometime morning, I want to have some Milk with egg sandwich works for me.
So, yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Nadia Cho, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for joining This Is Taste.
Thank you for having me.
This Is Taste is hosted by Eliza Abarbanel and me, Matt Rodbard. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things that are happening.